We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
His expertise in football is second to none.
670 The Score, senior football expert.
You're talking to one of the great techno boobs of all time.
Executive editor of Pro Football Weekly.
This is probably too much information, but I always keep my phone in my back pocket. I just feel like my ass is buzzing permanently at this point. It's crazy.
Shaw media analyst and sideline reporter for Westwood One.
We've got Joe calling in from Elgin.
I just want to say that you are so underrated. You're fantastic. You really are. You've got a great opinion. I would listen to you all day.
Hub Arkish.
I'd love to poke you. I'm not going to now.
With Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score. The Score.
Perfect time to talk football with Hub Arkish, as it always seems to be. But when there are pressing Bears stories, it's the best time to talk. And also, the best time for you to reach out for him in our next segment. You can line up your calls 312-644-6767 if you want to get prepared to have a conversation with Hub, who's on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. Our senior football expert, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Well, Hub, here we are. We have the official announcement of a hire. Do you know when or if we are going to hear from Ryan Poles, Bears general manager himself, as this is going on, looking for a coach, before a coach is hired? Do we know what the plan is?
Yeah, you know, I had some communication with the Bears last night, and I think that ideally they'd like to get the coach hired. They didn't say that specifically. They haven't committed one way or the other. They have said that it will be in person. The media, or at least some media, is going to be allowed back in Hallis Hall, and that it is coming soon. But right now, with all these interviews scheduled, I think it's probably the furthest thing from their mind. So my guess is they'd like to have a head coach hired, you know, as soon as tomorrow, with two interviews going on today, unless, and this is to me the really interesting question, does Ryan Poles have candidates that he wants to add, you know, who haven't been interviewed yet? So I think right now the focus is on the head coach. If it looks like that's going to get drawn out a little bit longer, then I suspect we will meet Poles before. But most likely they're going to try and get the head coach thing done, and then we'll meet both probably at the same time.
You want to check out Hub on Twitch? You can at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. You say they get the head coach thing done, where there would be some thought that Poles takes the job and they get out of the way, say, Bill Polian, thanks, Ryan, your show. Here are the files that we have on the people we've already talked to, but it is up to you now. You hire the coach. Then we played back what George McCaskey said on January 10th, where he said, ultimately, the decision on the GM and the head coach belongs to me. He said it. He said, George said it is George's decision. Is it still George's decision?
Yeah, just to be clear, when I said they, we were just talking about scheduling, you know, press conferences.
Right.
So I was talking about everybody involved as far as the hire. You know, I read that as it's George's final approval. But, you know, if we look at the entire scope of that press conference, he says that Ryan Poles is now completely in charge of the football operation, reporting only to him. And so I'd have to believe that if it is they, that it's George McCaskey and Ryan Poles, not the committee and Ryan Poles. But if, you know, this is kind of what I've written about the last couple of days. Nothing about this feels like anything is different.
Yes.
You know, and The sources that I've been talking to have indicated that it seems likely that, Ted Phillips has been every bit involved in this head coach hiring as he has been in the last three, four, five, that his stamp is on this as well as George's. I don't know that to be true or not, but that's what I'm hearing from reliable sources. And so it's left me a little concerned that nothing really has changed. The first thing that jumped out at me, my column on this is up at ShawLocal.com right now, is Ryan Poles and Ryan Pace's resumes. It could be the same guy.
Identical.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Please, I don't want people to misunderstand that. Ryan Poles is a great candidate. He's well thought of around the league. He apparently has been a finalist for all three jobs. I don't know if the Vikings have hired Adolfo Mensa yet. It looks like they're going to. But in all cases, Poles was a finalist. We believe he may have been the Vikings' first choice as well. He's the hot name around the league, so I'm not knocking this hire at all. And by the way, Ryan Pace's resume looked great when he was hired 2 and 4 years later. He was the executive of the year. It just didn't end well. So, let's not read too much into that. I'm making that reference only in looking at the process, I continue to ask myself, has anything changed at Hallis Hall? Because I think the one thing that everybody is the only thing in America right now that everybody could agree on is that without organizational changes with the Chicago Bears, it might not matter that much who is hired. And so, that's my real concern. That I would be so much more comfortable if we heard that, we haven't interviewed this guy yet. I want to talk to Dave Tobe, or I want to talk to Kevin O'Connell. Pick a name, any of the good names out there that the Bears haven't talked to yet, just so that I know that Ryan Poles came in, with a good clean slate, the ability to do anything he wants. If he does choose one of these three guys, and by the way, I don't know that any of them would be a bad choice. We're talking about, of course, Jim Caldwell and Dan Quinn and Matt Eberflus. Unless that was part of the interview process with him, it just doesn't feel like he got to do, the work to hire his own head coach.
And it strains credulity to think even after the fact. We know how they sold it previously. We've lived through this. When it was obvious to everybody involved that John Fox was hand-fed to Ryan Pace, technically they said it was Ryan Pace's hire. And they told us this. We've lived through this, where they said, "Oh yeah, that was Ryan's guy." But then afterward, we know that there was gray area in all of that. That he was presented to him as, "Hey, you want to hire this guy, right? Don't you? You want to hire him, don't you? You hire this guy. You want to hire him. You want to hire him. Make it your hire." And he wasn't in a position to say no. That's what, when based on your reporting, Hub, and what you're saying about Ted Phillips' involvement, my concern is that's what we're going to get again. That it is going to be this collaborative, Bill Polian led, Ted Phillips influenced effort, but then afterward they say, "Well, no, Rob, he would never have taken the job if that were the case, and this was absolutely his." And they can do it without lying. They can say it was his, but we've been through this too many times to not know better.
Yeah, Dan. I mean, I want to believe him. I really do. But everything you're saying is exactly right. It's accurate. And that's why Jim Caldwell would be a good hire. I mean, he early on in the process, I thought he could be a really good fit. But if he now gets the job, again, it's identical to the John Fox hire. Now the difference is that, I don't even know that there's differences, to be honest with you. I guess the fact that Caldwell's been away from the game for a couple of years and not as recently a head coach. But people forget that the day that they hired John Fox, he had been coaching a week earlier, and in the three prior seasons, he was 12-4, 13-3, and 12-4. So there was no reason to believe that was a bad hire. It turned out to be an awful hire because John came here and, for the most part, phoned it in on his third time around. I don't think Jim Caldwell would do that. And there's a lot of things that I do like about him, although I worry a little bit if this is going to be the organizational change and we're building for the future. And I know this is wrong because, age discrimination is awful. I'm not saying he can't coach at 67. He could be brilliant at 67. Pete Carroll's still doing a great job at 70. Belichick is that age. But you know, how long does he want to do it for? You know, is he coming in? Are we going through another culture change here where he's the first step and we got to wait for the second step, which is what happened with Fox? That's not what you want right now. You know, so now that said, there is a lot to recommend Jim Caldwell. And I feel bad for him being in this situation, because if he gets the job, there's going to be nothing but questions about this for the first couple of years.
And I think the age thing cuts both ways. Okay, people are saying the same thing. Well, he's only 36, and they, you know, again with Ryan Pace. Now you need a coach who is older, because there has to be some finite average amount of experience, which it sounds like it should be true, but I don't know that it is true. But, you know, they say, well, now that you have to counterbalance that with somebody who fits a certain profile, where why fall back on that if there isn't any objective evidence that suggests that's true?
Yeah, I heard you an hour or two ago bring that up, Dan, and I believe it's absolutely false. You know, you hired Ryan Poles because you think he's the best guy for the job. You have to do the same thing with the head coach, you know, and I don't care how old he is. You know, I mean, I think that Matt Eberflus has great credentials. I'm concerned about Dan Quinn. I'm not comfortable with that fit there. And again, yeah, he took a Falcons team, a young Falcons team, to a Super Bowl and would have won that Super Bowl. Some people blame Kyle Shanahan, which is ironic since he's the hottest coach in the league right now as a head coach. But the way it came apart afterwards and the problem that he had with his staff and constant turnover there, you know, this idea that, you know, in a year in Dallas, he did a remarkable job. I don't think he did such a remarkable job with that defense. They played well a lot of the time. So I'm not as high on Quinn as I would be on Caldwell and Eberflus. That said, I'm not saying it would be an awful hire. But again, I'm stuck here with there's a couple guys that aren't on the list who I like a little bit more. And that's why it would give me so much comfort if we heard before a final decision is made, Ryan Poles wants to talk to this guy or talk to that guy.
And if we're being fair about our comps to the Fox Pace hirings, whatever we want to call that, the last time we went through this and making sure that we're informed by it but not haunted by it, that the Bears roster then, as bad as it is now, it was worse then. And you didn't have a quarterback. And the fact that we went through the Mitchell Trubisky draft that blindsided the coach, that told us that there might be a schism between those two levels of the organization, between general manager and coach, and not everybody was on the same page. We don't have that, because it does appear, for whatever you think of Justin Fields, that looks like a unified front on however this is going down, that he's the guy.
Well, not just that the roster isn't that bad, Dan. The Bears were the laughingstock of the NFL because of the locker room, because of the culture, because of the damage that Brandon Marshall and others had done, you know. And they needed to completely wipe that away, wipe it out. And I remember talking to veterans, Kyle Long in particular, the first week in Bourbonnais with John Fox. He said, we can breathe again. It's like a breath of fresh air. They don't need that now. I mean, the culture here is good. Look at what these guys did with Matt Nagy the last 4 or 5 weeks. So, you know, none of that is a concern. And that's why the whole veteran coach thing is hollow to me. You know, I mean, I don't care about blending an old guy with a new guy because you got a young general manager. I want the best coach. And that's not, you know, the new head coach, the next head coach is walking into a pretty good situation in terms of the locker room. He does have some young talent to build around, and he's got three special players on defense, assuming they don't tear it down and get rid of them, you know, in Mack and Roquan Smith and Robert Quinn. So, yeah, you're just looking for the best coach out there who's ready to win now. I know the roster isn't ready to win now, but the coach has to be, because where this roster is at, if they decide to reload instead of rebuild, they should be competitive this year, at least able to play with most teams, and maybe even ready to make a run at somebody in 23. If not, then it's probably because you missed on Justin Fields.
This may be thinking too far down the line, but if in fact it were to be Caldwell, do you think there could be, there doesn't have to be an outspoken succession plan, but would that mean that your coordinator hires take on a greater meaning and urgency, that there could be a larger overall structure if, in fact, Caldwell were to be more of an executive head coach than absolutely be in full game day charge of one side of the ball?
You know, I don't think that Caldwell would want the job on those terms, and I don't think you should hire on those terms, and you absolutely should not hire a coach because of his focus on one side of the ball or the other. You've now made that mistake, you know, and you need a head coach. And I would argue that one of the compelling selling points for Jim Caldwell is, of the three, you have to assume he might be able to put the best staff together, because he's done it several times before and he's done it very well, you know. And I'm not saying that Eberflus or Quinn can't, but Eberflus hasn't done it and Quinn struggled with it, you know. So to me, that's an argument for Jim Caldwell. My only concern with Jim Caldwell is he in this for the next 5-10 years? You know, is he here to build a perennial playoff team, that has a chance to win a Super Bowl in a few years? And if that's the case, then there's not a lot of other things to worry about with him, because he's a winner, you know. And you look at what happened in Indianapolis. You can argue, yeah, he had Peyton Manning, but the only losing season, bad year, you know, what, 14-2, 10-6, and then they went 2-14 because Peyton Manning's, you know, it wasn't broken, but people like to say broken neck, and everything came apart that year. And Jim Irsay was ready for change because Polian went out with him, you know, and then he goes to Detroit. And he has 3 out of 4 winning seasons, thanks to the playoffs twice. I mean, you know, nobody does that with the Lions. I mean, this guy's a quality head coach. So there is plenty to argue for Jim Caldwell. He's a perplexing candidate to me. I wrote about a week ago that I listed my top three choices were Todd Bowles, and Brian Daboll was my second choice. Looks like he's got the Giants job if he wants it. And then I said it would be Jim Caldwell, but I'm going with Matt Eberflus because of these concerns I have about where Caldwell's at in his career. So I'm not, you know, negative about either Caldwell or Eberflus. I've been on that bandwagon since last week.
You didn't mention Brian Flores, who, when the moment he became available, he shot to the top of some of oddsmakers' charts because of how desirable he would be. Why, as time has gone on, has his star diminished seemingly?
2 weeks later, Dan, he's had two interviews, the Bears and with Nick Caserio in Houston, who he grew up with in the Patriots organization. And the reason is because with 18, well, the Dolphins aren't going to look, but the other 7 teams, and now maybe the Saints looking, they've had time to find out what happened in Miami and why he was fired, you know. And I think he probably will be a head coach again if he goes down the right track. You know, he's obviously got some real ability, but his people skills apparently are just awful, you know, or at least were in Miami. And that's not a good thing for a head coach. And what was he, 36 when he got the job? And I'm not talking about being too young. I'm talking about he'd only been coaching for, you know, a number of years. He needs to take a step back, get some experience, and probably will be a candidate again in a couple few years. But I'd be stunned if anybody hired him in this cycle. It is interesting that there's now 9 jobs open instead of 8, and still nobody's been hired. But, following all these trackers as best I can, nobody but the Bears even wants to talk to him.
Are all other Bears coaching positions open right now? How does this work as far as who may be under contract, who may have a buyout coming? Is it understood or presumed that whether it's Juan Castillo or Chris Tabor or Clancy Barone or anybody else, that are all of these positions technically now open?
No, whatever the length of those contracts were at the end of the season is how they stand. Now, some of them, you know, probably or may have been out of contract, but if they weren't out of contract, they have not been released or fired. And this is the way it works with all NFL teams. If you fire your head coach, whoever the assistants who are under contract stay until the new coach comes in, decides if he wants to keep them or not. And then they're let go because, again, they have to be paid too, unless they get other jobs. And then there's a balancing act depending on whether, you know, who they work for. But it was interesting, you know, Sean Desai, we heard, you know, interviewed with the Seattle Seahawks. I did not see any reports one way or the other whether he needed to get permission from the Bears. The fact that he just got the job last year, I have to believe he's still under contract. I don't think he, you know, got the job on a 1-year deal as a defensive coordinator. So, and again, if it's Jim Caldwell, that would be interesting. If it's Dan Quinn or Matt Eberflus as defensive guys, you got to assume that they might have their own people on their list. But I got to tell you, Sean Desai had a really good first year. You know, we don't talk about this enough, but with everything that went on around him and around the team and the way that defense performed, in spite of losing Khalil Mack for the better part of the year and all the other injuries they battled and everything else, he did a good job. And, you know, I would not be disappointed if he got another year or two here or would be surprised if he was seriously considered elsewhere, because like the rest of these young guns, he's one of them. You know, a guy with only, 8 years experience coming in, just 2 years as a position coach, and suddenly he's a defensive coordinator. So, you know, with him in particular, I'm really curious. I wouldn't be surprised if John DeFilippo was retained, only for some continuity with Justin Fields. But it just depends on where those contracts were at in terms of whether how many guys were up and how many guys needed to be renewed.
We are going to hit the phone lines next with Hub. So there are a couple locked in. Room for you if you want to jump on. 312-644-6767. It's you. It's Hub. It is a lot going on with the Bears and the NFL and championship weekend coming up as well in what could be a rapidly changing NFC North, too, as background and context. All that straight ahead on The Score. Let's set him up and knock him down. Calls for Hub on a busy news day for the Bears and the NFL as the Bears remain in the head coaching market. And we have all sorts of uncertainty as to what now the process is, despite what has already been said about what the process is. And we will begin with David Woodridge on The Score.
Rest in peace, Les. Your legacy will never be forgotten. Hub, I just want to talk a little bit about the fallout from the Buffalo-Kansas City game. There's a lot of talk about overtime rules and how things need to be changed. And I don't know if the rules need to be changed. I wanted to know, do you have any insight as to the heat that the Buffalo coaching staff might be taking? Like, why didn't they squib kick that kick? Why didn't they double cover Travis Kelce? It seemed like Buffalo really had a meltdown at the end of that game defensively and on special teams. Could you comment? Thanks, guys.
Well, Dave, yeah, I mean, a couple things there. There's obviously, you know, plenty of debate. The rule sucks. I know I've been on record on this for years since they made the last change. The rule sucks in the regular season. You know, if you're going to give both teams a chance to kick a field goal, why wouldn't you give both teams a chance to score a touchdown? You go to overtime. Each team gets the ball once. If the second team, you know, takes the lead, the game is over. After that, you go to sudden death. It's pretty simple. And it's wrong in the regular season. It's wrong in the postseason. As far as heat on the Buffalo Bills staff, Sean McDermott had a brain cramp. Obviously, he should have squib kicked, that is what I'm trying to say. I didn't know that was so hard. Now, you know, the one thing he may be thinking, though, is that squib kick, you know, that can end up at the 40, you know, the 35 by kicking out of the, he went to the 25. So I'm not saying it wasn't intentional, but it proved to be a bad idea. As far as the coverage, you know, yeah, I mean, you can say Les Frazier missed on one play. We don't even know if the coverage was played properly. So I think at that point, when you think about went on three touchdowns and a field goal in the final 2 minutes of the game, you know, I think both defenses were exhausted. To hang out the coaching staff is just not right. In 2020 hindsight, McDermott, you know, made a mistake by not squib kicking that ball. As far as the defensive coverages, I mean, you know, you can go back to that whole 2 minute sequence. I don't think there was a contested catch on either side of the ball. I know Gabriel Davis made the corner fall down on the one of his four touchdowns, but where was the safety help? So it was off. There wasn't much defense played in the fourth quarter of that game. You know, that's a different issue. But I don't think the Buffalo coaching staff comes out any worse because of what happened in overtime.
Here's Frank in Oak Park with Hub on the Score.
Hub, I have a question about the state of a Bears position group the new Bears GM will have to deal with. I also have a double for a player that'll suit up in one of the conference championship games this Sunday. With the Bears position group, I'm looking at issues the team had at corner. How confident are you that Thomas Graham can become a starter opposite Jalen Johnson or as a nickelback? And does this relieve the Bears from the need to spend one of their second-day picks on a corner or and commit a real investment of free agent dollars at the position? Regarding lookalikes, I often viewed 49ers games and thought streaky, off-injured QB Jimmy Garoppolo looked like someone I'd seen before. I finally have that person. It's the late actor Ray Danton, a fellow who died 30 years ago. Danton earned some fame in the 50s to 70s for roles in films like The Rise and Fall of Legs Diamond and The George Raft Story. He piled up 117 roles heavy with mobster parts in TV shows like 77 Sunset Strip, Hawaiian Eye, and The Rockford Files. He also directed 24 TV shows and films as well. Now, he's not a Jimmy G doppelganger like Lee Harvey Oswald in the photo of that mystery Russian army colonel. However, if it wasn't for a 60-year age differential, you might think they are secret brothers. If they ever do the Ray Danton story, maybe Mr. Garofalo gets the lead role.
You are absolutely priceless.
Yeah, Frank, I never want to correct you, but I believe it's Garoppolo, not Garofalo. You got Janine Garofalo and Jimmy Garoppolo mixed up.
To pull Ray Danton out of there, my God.
I'll tell you what's funny about it. You always right. I mean, I had forgotten the guy's name, but every time I look at Garoppolo, I think I'm watching a 70s TV series, and that's who it was. It was Ray Danton.
Somebody on, I don't know where it was, but a website took all NFL starting quarterbacks and then did makeovers as if they were women. And I got to say, Jimmy Garoppolo fared very well. You know, he's got nice cheekbones, nice bone structure. But yeah, what was he asking about Thomas Graham?
Well, okay. He's talking about just the Bears cornerback situation in general. And Frank, listen, I like what I've seen of Thomas Graham. I like a lot of what I've seen of Kendall Vildor. He was playing well, and then it all came apart. He got back on the field towards the end of the year. It wasn't as bad. I'm not ready to write him off by any stretch. I think Jalen Johnson still has a Pro Bowl ceiling. So I think you want to add more there. I think it's ironic that Eli Apple, wasn't good enough to stick with this team, but he'll be starting for the Bengals, come Sunday. I thought that's where you were going. We were talking about, a double for Sunday. So it's an interesting position. You get a lot of guys who recycle there and have ups and downs in their careers. It's certainly not a strength, but I don't see it as the glaring weakness that, say, wide receiver is right now, or maybe the defensive line if you can't re-sign Bilal Nichols. I hope they will. But if Akeem Hicks is gone and Bilal Nichols, who is a free agent, you don't re-sign him. And then I don't know what the new regime is going to think about Eddie Goldman. There's a potential $6 million cap savings there. So there are other areas that concern me as much or more than cornerback.
This is South Shore Bill on the Score. A lot of regulars today. Hello, Bill.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, why is it that it seems that Brian Daboll's just basically been taken off the radar suddenly as a possibility as the best coach? I mean, this is a man who's had success in the league. He's had different coaching jobs with 5 Super Bowl teams, and for what he's done the last 3 years in Buffalo has seemed just tremendous in terms of quarterback development. And from what I read, he just seems like someone that a lot of people like to find easy to work with, and is possibly a dynamic up-and-coming coach. And then suddenly he seems to have just fallen off the radar as the Bears coaching candidate. Can you tell me why that is? And lastly, real quick, what do you think the odds are of the Bears shipping off one of the ends, either Quinn or Mack, to try and collect some picks, which they're very short on? Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill, I at the end of the day, all I can tell you is just different flavors for different folks. I mean, they interviewed 10 coaches. If Dennis Allen, who was supposed to be coming, is still coming, I don't know. Although now with Sean Payton out in New Orleans, you keep an eye on what's going on there. I got to believe Pete Carmichael's probably the favorite. But, I referenced earlier in the show my column. It's up at ShawLocal.com if anybody wants to read it. Brian Daboll is my second choice for the job behind Todd Bowles. And Todd Bowles, who just interviewed on Saturday and is available, is apparently off the radar right now, too. It's who they like, and they do have some other good choices. I happen to like Bowles and Daboll more than the other guys that we're talking about. But I do think there may be a sense that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll were a package deal for the Giants, because I know Daboll, I believe, Monday went back in for a second interview with the Giants. And of course, Joe Shane was the assistant general manager there, another guy the Bears interviewed for their GM job. So a lot of this is, you know, with these four teams that have both openings, GM and head coach, a lot of this work is getting done in the interview room. But the only answer I can give you your question is apparently the Bears committee, didn't like Daboll quite as much as some of the others. And obviously at the moment, we have no idea what Ryan Poles thinks of him.
Before we let you go, Hub, real quick, just because you've been on this and we're not going to talk to you again, at least scheduled until next week, you are very strong on Todd Bowles. There are a lot of people pointing to the recency effect of, you know, the last thing we saw, not so great, whether it's Leslie Frazier or Bowles. Why, give us three bullet points. Why is he your guy?
Well, first of all, I thought he got a bad deal with the Jets. He came in, built the first year, had an excellent second year at 10-6, and then they came apart for a couple of years. And it was, at the time, arguably the worst front office in the NFL. The support around him was terrible. He never had the quarterback answer there. Now, you know, 4 years and a losing record, so he's out. You understand that. But he then goes down to Tampa and builds, you know, a Super Bowl defense. Clearly Bruce Arians gave him the defense, much like Matt Nagy did with Vic Fangio. As a matter of fact, you know, Bowles wanted to come here in 19, but he had promised Bruce Arians that if he took another job, he would go there. Mm-hmm. And then you just talk to coaches who've worked with him, players who've played for him, the respect they hold this guy in, what I know of his demeanor and the way he coaches and the way he carries himself. Is that he is a perfect blend of a player's coach and yet a no-nonsense guy who's not going to tolerate any silliness. And I love his resume. I love what I know about him. And I keep getting back to these second-time head coaches, you know, who have turned into Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll and Andy Reid and you know, the list goes kind of Bruce Arians, the list goes on. Sometimes they just need to learn to step back and grow. That's where I'm at with Brian Flores. I'd be really negative if they brought him in now, but you know, 3-4 years from now, off of some of the good things he showed in Miami, who knows? Bowles certainly wasn't that bad with the Jets, but I just think he's head coaching material, and I think he needs another chance. And getting Justin Fields at the ages, I think he'd put together a good staff. He's done it. So there's just a lot that I like about him.
Hub, thank you as always.
All right, Dan, take care.
That is Hub Arkish, our senior football expert. When we come back, the Bulls will be in action tonight on these airwaves, taking on the Toronto Raptors, who have also had some injuries and attrition. It's sure not stopping them from scoring. They've got a lineup that may challenge whatever the Bulls are rolling out there tonight without their best two defensive guards. Our own Rick Camp is going to weigh in as we break down briefly the Bulls and Raptors for our final segment on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show on The Score. When the Bulls were entirely intact, or as close to intact as they could be as a reasonable NBA team would be, it felt different when you were looking at a schedule and saying, well, this and maybe this. Everything's kind of a question mark now. When you get pantsed by the Orlando Magic the way that they did, it resonates. It sticks with you a little bit. And you start replaying some of those difficulties that they had against the Oklahoma City Thunder, against pressure and getting into their half court and what their new reconfigured backcourt is. Well, tonight, it's the Toronto Raptors standing in their regular season way. The Score's Rick Camp, who does a lot of the Score's pregame, postgame, and plenty of Bulls analysis, is also just so happens to be our executive producer. And I don't know what to make of this one, big fella, because that lineup that Nick Nurse can throw out there is long in a way that could give the Bulls some problems.
Yeah, the Rockford's finest, Fred VanVleet, is questionable for tonight's game, so he's the only like mildly normal-sized human that they generally have in their lineup. But I know especially last game, their shortest person in their rotation, which is always a pretty short rotation as is, was 6'5", Gary Trent. So, because part of the whole Masai Ujiri thing is get a bunch of wing defenders that you hope you can train to shoot a little bit, and you work from there. And so you've got OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam. Now, Scotty Barnes is also questionable, so that would be another one.
And he's somebody to watch. If you haven't gotten a chance to see rookie Scotty Barnes yet, that's a guy whose name is going to be familiar enough to you.
Yes. So as I look at Toronto, who's on the back, a second night of a back-to-back, which should help the Bulls a little bit, they actually started 7'2" Chris Boucher at the four and had 6'9" Precious Achiuwa at the center. And that's more due to skill set than anything else because Precious can't shoot.
Precious. Now, I defy you to watch a Bulls game, anything including Precious Achiuwa, and not every time.
Yep.
Like, don't you hurt my dog! Precious. You're Precious. I don't know, mister. Yeah. He's got a broken leg. He's in a lot of pain. I can't help it. I should be able to help it, but no. I am a child.
Oh, all of us are. I mean, if any of our off-air conversation today has proved anything, it's that we're children.
Okay. You said it. I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah.
So anytime Rick tells us, look at your phone, usually it's like, you know, Mitch said do this and get in this read and do this, or something. There's a news that just broke, you know, look at your phone. Or he'll be waving. So he says, look at your phone. And I look at my phone, and all it is a picture of a juvenile obese beaver. Like rolls and rolls and rolls of fat on this young, very healthy, ready for winter beaver.
Yeah, it is.
I'm glad to know. Yeah. Like, you want to think of what's your executive producer doing? Well, he's making phone calls. He's following everything that's going on.
Yeah, that's
the coaching search.
Yeah, really, it was just Schmutzy tweeted that the I'm Fat podcast account, and I got the notification. So
and there it is.
It is wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
A great big fat person.
Yeah, I mean this. This is a multi-role beaver. I mean, this thing is. Yeah, that's special. So I will retweet it from my account. It's at the Oregon Zoo. So if you're in Oregon listening on Ye Olde Odyssey app, go check out the fat beaver.
Okay, Bulls are at home. The Bulls now are settling into the backcourt of the next 2 months, which is going to be DeMar DeRozan and Io, right? But even though DeMar, they list him as...
I mean, it's DeMar's kind of the three. They basically have a three-guard lineup. It's,
right.
But it's I would assume, and I don't think this has been confirmed, that it's going to be Io, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan.
Okay.
And then whatever you can do for the four spot is going to be interesting. But one thing you can do against Toronto, just by the nature of how they play defense, they have allowed corner threes to everybody. Everybody gets to shoot corner threes. So if the Bulls can get those, which they've been better at doing as the year has gone on, I know in the last 2 weeks, Bulls are top 10 in terms of percentage of shots from the corners.
Good.
So they've improved on that as the year has gone on. They're still not shooting many above the break, but from the corners, they've been able to do that. So that should be something, if they can shoot a decent percentage, that that they should be able to take advantage of, even with all the length that Toronto has.
And not having Lonzo, who just lived for that shot.
Yeah, that's not great. But if you think about it, Toronto has all these guys with length. They cheat in when guys drive, so then they rely on the length to get back out to the corner. And it's just that they allow a lot of guys to take those shots because they see all the space, even though it's less space than you actually think.
Because they're longer than you recognize.
Because the guys are so much longer than you think.
Well, that's what I see with Io, too, is you notice that Io covers more ground defensively than his feet tell the offense he's covering,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense, because he plays a lot bigger than his height because his wingspan is what it is.
Yeah, and he's so good at making himself skinny when he's trying to get by on screens and get over a screen on these guards. And one thing that'll be interesting is if Fred VanVleet and Scottie Barnes are out, Pascal Siakam is the point guard of that team then. He had 12 assists last night.
Oof.
So he is a guy that is really interesting in that way. Just how are the Bulls going to prioritize? Because a lot of these guys can shoot. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if you see like DeMar on like Chris Boucher or something like that. If the lineup is similar to last night, you're going to see a big old height difference there. And with 7'2" Chris Boucher, who weighs like 6 pounds.
There is your Bulls-Raptors preview on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show. We'll do Transition with Lawrence next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.